And Radio Derb is on the air. This is your vernally genial host, John Derbyshire, bringing you the week's news. Not much big news this week, folks, so I'm afraid you'll have to make do with a lot of picayune stuff. I do promise you up front, though, that the following segments will contain no Anthony Weiner jokes. So far as Radio Derb is concerned, we're through with all that low-grade tabloid stuff. From now on, I shall leave Anthony Weiner to his own devices. The May 22nd public killing of a British soldier in a London street by two Muslims has had a few postscripts. We got news about both killers this week. Their names are Michael Adebolajo, 28 years old, and Michael Adebowale, 22 years old, both of Nigerian origin. Those names are way too confusing, so I'll refer to them as Olajo and Wale. Lajo, the older one, was the guy waving blood-stained hands and apologising to women in that video clip you've probably seen. Lajo is still hospitalised after being shot by police. Just a note here about British Police Academy training from an inside source. Quote, the 200 hours of classes in diversity appreciation is what you need to concentrate on. If you score well on that, you needn't bother much with the 45 minutes of firearms instruction. End quote. So we can be confident that Lajo wasn't too badly hurt. We can be even more confident in the case of Wale, who was fit enough to make a brief appearance in court this week for an initial hearing. Mr. Adebowale will have another brief court appearance next week. He'll probably have another one the week after that, and then another the week after that, and so on. The objective for his lawyers will be to match and surpass the record for delaying a Muslim terrorist trial, currently held by the lawyers for Fort Hood shooter, alleged shooter, Nidal Hassan. That's 3.5 years and still counting. In my Tackies magazine column this week, I made passing mention of the British serial killer, John Christie, who, back in 1953, was arrested in March, tried in June, and hanged in July. The Brits don't hang murderers nowadays, more's the pity, and if they did, they probably wouldn't hang Muslims, who are a protected class. I suppose this savage will get a sentence eventually, but don't hold your breath. The thoroughly pussified Brits have responded to the public murder of one of their soldiers in the only way they now know how to respond to any misfortune that befalls their nation, with an orgy of sentimentality. The spot where serviceman Rigby was hacked to death has now been covered with a great heap of flowers, or floral tributes, as the media say. A heap of deportation orders for radical Muslim preachers would have been more to the point. But that, of course, would be insensitive, wouldn't it? 50 years ago, an American statesman remarked famously, well, it was famous over there, that Britain had, quote, lost an empire and not yet found a role. Well, the Brits have found a role now, all right. Grovelling bootlickers to all the savages and lunatics of the Third World. Britain's finished. Stick a fork in it. Just a couple more on that London killing. We learned this week that Lajo, that's the older one, the one who waved bloodstained hands at us, Lajo travelled to Kenya back in 2010. The Kenyans arrested him, along with several other foreign Muslims, because, they said, they were planning to cross into Somalia to join a terrorist group there. As it happens, a British Special Forces unit was in the neighbourhood at the time. The Kenyans turned Lajo over to them and they hustled him back to Britain on a plane. What happened to Lajo when he got back to Britain? Nothing, of course. He was just let loose. Wouldn't want to seem intolerant, would we? Blimey, no. Last year, Lajo showed up in Kenya again, and again headed for the Somali border. The Kenyans, however, are better at monitoring foreign nuisances than the British are, and furthermore, they hold the peculiar belief that their country is better off without such nuisances. They put Lajo on a plane back to London. He didn't stay long. A few months later, he was back in Kenya again trying to join the Somali terrorists. He met with Sheikh Hassan Makbul, a known conduit for them, but who was under surveillance by Kenyan authorities. With his cover blown, Lajo ran south into Tanzania with the Kenyans on his heels, and thence he headed back to London again, where, again, he was left at large, untroubled by the British police and security services, who were occupied with more important things. What kind of things? Why, combating racism, of course. What could be more important than that? Following the murder of serviceman Rigby, the British authorities have spared no effort to make it clear to their citizens that, as tragic as the killing was, if diversity were to become a casualty, that would be even worse. The English Defence League, a working-class protest movement against multiculturalism, is a particular target. Quote from The Independent, that's a London broadsheet newspaper, May 25th, quote, "Police have arrested three people ahead of an EDL protest," EDL is the English Defence League, "for allegedly making racist tweets. Northumbria police said two people from Gateshead and a third from Stockton were held earlier. The EDL has planned their demonstration for months, but the horrific murder of drummer Lee Rigby in Woolwich on Wednesday has heightened tensions in the local community." End quote. Spot the weasel words there. Heightened tensions in the local community. Translation: the white proles are angry. Better round up a few to set an example. That should take care of it. Bottom line here, tolerate foreign terrorists up to the point where they commit public murder. Harass native patriots as soon as they tweet a protest. A scattering of items here related in one way or another to the Caribbean. First, let me just pat myself on the back for having finally schooled myself to give this word the American pronunciation, Caribbean. Back in Airstrip 1, we used to say Caribbean. Okay, first Caribbean item. Our brilliant, eloquent Vice President, Joe Biden, took a trip down there to sign a trade agreement. Since the Caribbean governments are mostly coloured people, Joe was in full guilty white liberal cringe mode. In that spirit, he took the opportunity to promote the immigration bill currently being mulled over by the US Senate. Quote from Joe: "Do we respect one another? And do we show respect? For my country, that means reforming our immigration system so the 11 million undocumented men, women and many children who came through no choice of their own, can come out of the shadows and be full participants in American life, because they are already, in many cases, participating and contributing to the growth and prosperity of my country, but required to constantly live in fear and live in the shadows. End quote. Did you get that? To show respect to another nation, according to Joe, you have to give amnesty to illegals from that nation. You have to throw open your labour markets, your schools, your hospitals and your welfare services to them. Otherwise, you're not showing respect. If I thought Joe Biden was capable of reflective thought, I'd ask him to reflect on the fact that, by his definition of respect, no nation on earth respects the USA. But I don't, so I won't. And then this stuff about living in fear and living in the shadows. If they're living in fear, then surely they'd be happier back in their home countries, wouldn't they? Who wants to live in fear? As for living in the shadows, well, there weren't too many shadows in the news photographs I saw last week of Barack Obama and Joe Biden meeting in the Oval Office with self-confessed illegal aliens. The scofflaws-in-chief listened sympathetically to, quote from the White House blog, "the stories of courage and determination these young immigrants shared," end quote. Maybe they should take that courage and determination back to their own countries, try to improve them a bit. Another Caribbean item. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, who is of Caribbean parentage, offered major news outlets a meeting to brief them on the current brouhaha over justice harassing reporters thought to have been getting leaked material from intelligence agencies. Holder insisted, however, that the meeting be off the record. This ticked off even the administration-friendly media. They've all turned down the invitation. What is it about attorneys general? Not that they've been uniformly bad this past few years. Mike Mukasey was a decent sort, and John Ashcroft was no worse than just clueless. Eric Holder and Alberto Gonzalez, though, are white-hating race shills, and Janet Reno was a crazy witch-hunting feminist. For the nation's head law enforcement officer, we've sure had some weird choices. I've known a few people in law enforcement. Any one of them would have made a better attorney general than Holder, Gonzalez, or Reno. 315 million citizens to choose from, and this is what we come up with? For heaven's sake. Just one more from the Caribbean. 65-year-old Petrona Smith of New York City is suing the city for wrongful dismissal from her job teaching Spanish in junior high. She says she was fired last year after a student complained when she called him a Negro. Ms. Smith says she was just trying to teach the Spanish word for black, which is, yes, Negro, or actually Negro. The punchline to this story is that Ms. Smith is herself black from the Caribbean. If that doesn't make any sense, let me add a little subtext. I don't know how it is elsewhere, but in New York City there is tension between American blacks and West Indians. West Indian blacks tell you the American blacks are lazy and complain too much. American blacks tell you the West Indians are pushy, act white, and think themselves superior. I'm just reporting what I've heard from both sides. I must say, I think there's something a bit fishy about this story. Doesn't Spanish get taught every day to black kids? How do you teach it without mentioning the word for black? Whatever. Miss Smith is lawyered up, and if she ends up with a few million dollars of city money in her pocketbook, I shall not be in the least surprised. Seven more months until Americans are all enveloped in the warm bosom of Obamacare. On present evidence, this is not going to go well. Betsy McCoy, whose reporting helped to sink HillaryCare 20 years ago, Betsy has been writing some devastating commentary on the coming changes. Sample, quote, "Take a healthy single man in California who earns $29,130 per year. That's $14 an hour. The very customer the Obama administration is targeting. If he buys the cheapest plan, that's called a bronze plan, if he buys the cheapest plan after a federal subsidy, he'll still have to write a check each month for $137. The feds say that's affordable. But how many months will go by before he decides to spend that $137 on a car payment instead?" End quote. If that guy does so decide, says Betsy, and many others decide likewise, then to the subprime mortgage crisis and the looming student loan crisis, you'll be able to add a healthcare premium default crisis. Betsy is writing there about the healthcare exchanges that the states are supposed to set up, where persons and families below certain income levels get a federal subsidy to assist them buying healthcare. Although, of course, they still owe that monthly premium. California has now unveiled the details of their exchange. There are four levels of plan you can choose from: platinum, gold, silver, and bronze. Even the silver plan has premiums higher than what you can currently get direct from an insurance company, though. 50% higher, says Betsy. And to cover higher taxes on insurers and mandatory benefits like, quote, substance abuse services that have been slipped into the law by special interests like the mental health lobbies, to cover all that, you'll be getting less choice of physicians and hospitals. So, if you're an ordinary middle-class American, there's an excellent chance you'll be paying more for less under Obamacare. And the worst features of the current system remain in place. The yoking of healthcare to employment, for instance. One of the stupidest ideas anyone ever came up with. Why should my healthcare expenses be any business of my employer? We're all used to it, but it's nuts. Who, building a healthcare system from scratch, who would ever include such a feature? One thing I can predict with absolute confidence: if and when Obamacare is up and running, there will be no nation in the world, none, from Albania to Zimbabwe, none, not one country, seeking to model its healthcare system on America's. Out there in the world, there are a lot of ways of doing healthcare. None of them is as crazily expensive and inefficient as ours. The trial of George Zimmerman opens June 10th in Florida. This is the neighborhood watch captain who shot black teenager Trayvon Martin last year during some kind of violent confrontation. It would be nice to think that we might discover, from the evidence presented to the court, just precisely what transpired between Zimmerman and Martin. That, however, is not very likely. I think we all remember how the media and the Florida law enforcement authorities set the whole thing up to fit their preconceived narrative of racist white thug murdering meek, law-abiding black child out of sheer malice. NBC even edited recordings of Zimmerman's phone calls to make it seem that he acted from race prejudice. Those of us who pay attention to these things soon learned, as the evidence came out, that Zimmerman was neither white nor a thug, and that Martin was neither meek nor law-abiding nor a child. We are a small minority, though. Most Americans get their news from mainstream outlets. For them, the narrative is still in place. It's still in place for the media and judicial elites, too, and they mean to keep it there. For George Zimmerman, the fix is in. This week, we learned that a court employee, technician Ben Krudboss, has held back, or perhaps even deleted, some photographs and text messages from Trayvon Martin's cell phone that showed the deceased in an unflattering light, flaunting his drug usage, playing with handguns, practicing street fighting skills, and so on. Krudboss, we are told, has been suspended from his duties. I wouldn't worry too much on his behalf. Even in the unlikely event he gets fired, he'll probably be offered a job by NBC. Meanwhile, the judge in the case has refused to allow such negative evidences of Martin's character as survived Mr. Krudboss's editing to be used in opening statements at the trial, although she left open the possibility they might be permitted later on. I think we all know the possible outcomes here. As best I can judge, and on the advice of legal friends, second-degree murder will be very difficult to prove, even with the authorities and the media running interference for the prosecution. An acquittal is therefore possible. It would, of course, be followed by Eric Holder, on behalf of his people, stepping in with a federal civil rights prosecution, such as we had for the Rodney King case. Although possible, however, an acquittal is not very likely. There will have to be some blacks on the jury, and they will resolutely vote to convict Zimmerman, whatever the evidence presented. If the non-blacks on the jury won't go along, we'll have a hung jury and a retrial. Zimmerman is toast regardless. In our politicised and racialised justice system, assaulting or killing a member of the protected classes is essentially a political crime. Just as in the Rodney King case, there can only be one right verdict, and the authorities will keep trying until they get it. And now, our closing miscellany of brief items. Imprimis. The BBC carried out an interesting survey recently. They polled 26,000 people around the world, asking them to rate other countries on whether their influence on the world was mainly positive or negative. Bottom of the poll came Iran, which got a positive rating from only 15% of those polled. North Korea and Pakistan also polled badly. Top of the poll, Germany, followed by Canada, Britain and Japan. The USA was number 8, just ahead of China. Given that schools pretty much everywhere, certainly in the USA, teach that German history began in 1933 and ended in 1945, this is a surprising result. It's even more so if you look at the breakdown by nation polled. 59% of people overall thought that Germany makes a positive contribution, but in Britain it was 78%, and in France 81%. So I guess that little spot of unpleasantness 70 years ago has been put behind us. Speaking as a Germanophile, I'm glad. This talented nation, with its illustrious roster of writers, composers, philosophers, scientists, mathematicians, and statesmen, deserves a better press than it gets from our schools and our popular media. The 150th anniversary of Bismarck's unification is coming up in 3 years. I look forward to celebrating it with a stein of good German beer. Item: two Asian women living in Saudi Arabia have been found guilty of witchcraft. They've been sentenced to 1,000 lashes and 10 years in prison each. The two Asian women, and I'll assume that Asian here means Filipino, the two women were maids in Saudi households. The households suffered some unspecified misfortunes and naturally assumed that it was because of sorcery. The country's Commission for the Promotion of Virtue and Prevention of Vice was called in. They searched the houses and found, quote, talismans and other magic items, end quote, in the maids' bedrooms. At this point, I'm tempted to insert a Hillary Clinton joke, but I don't want to be turned into a frog. Item: food fascism is one of the more annoying features of our time. New York City is the beating heart of this phenomenon, with Mayor Michael Bloomberg banning salt, trans fat, soda, and anything else he thinks is bad for us. The food fascists are roaming far afield, though. Here's a story from Salford in the north of England. The municipal authority there wants to ban chips, which is to say, French fries. At any rate, they want to ban the sale of chips before 5 p.m. to stop children getting too fat. This is another nail in the coffin of traditional British culture. Fish and chips has been a major food group over there for a century and more. One of my aunts claimed to have survived through the Blitz eating nothing but fish and chips. Cigarette smokers have been driven out of our office buildings to stand huddled in the street, indulging their little vice. For the chip lovers of Salford, it's even worse. They'll have to head for the city limits if they feel like a nice chip butty for their lunch. Oh, you don't know what a chip butty is? Poor soul. Poor deprived soul. Item, finally, in not entirely unrelated news. A chap in the city of Nice on the French Riviera has been charged with eating his grandmother. On searching the suspect's house, police found Granny's liver on a shelf in the refrigerator. Most of the rest of her was found scattered around the property. There's not much you can say about a story like this, other than, ew. So I'll just leave it with you as a shocking example of man's inhumanity to Gran. And that's it, listeners. A slow week in the news department, but at least we have summer on the horizon. As you hear this, in fact, it's already the month of June. Let's continue last week's theme of 1950s movie musicals with this classic from Carousel. And while we do, let's keep in mind our fellow citizens down there in Oklahoma, still digging out from the tornado damage. More from Radio Derb next week.
June is busting out all over. All over the meadow and the hill.
Crops are busting out of bushes and the romping river pushes every little wheel that wheels beside a mill.
June is busting out all over. The ocean is full of jacks and jills.
With her little tail a-swishing, every lady fish is wishing that a male would come and grab her by the gills.
Because it's June, 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 just because.